Yes, I'd like to welcome you to the next episode of Crosscut Maker Podcast. This is a podcast that deals specifically with eschatology and current events and how I believe, and many others believe, that God is setting the stage for the tribulation period. I was opening these podcasts with further information. The main ministry I do is social media. You can find me on almost all platforms at Crosscut Maker. I also have three websites. One of them is gospel30.com. That's a 30-second presentation of the gospel. I have crosscutcom.com. That's crosscut.com. And that's where I have all of my writings, all of my lessons and essays and tracts and different things are all found on that website. And I also have eoa-ind.com, which is what stands for End of Age Indicators, and that's what I deal with on the podcast. And that is, on that website you can see kind of the summary of why I do believe, biblically speaking, that we are approaching the end of the age. Of course, no one knows the day nor the hour, so I've never predicted a day, nor will I ever. I won't predict a week, I won't predict a month, I won't predict a year, I won't predict a decade. I just believe that everything that we see occurring in the world, specifically over the past probably 5 years, more so in the last two or three, I think everybody's noticed that things are accelerating towards the end of the age. And it's not just because of COVID-19, it's not just because of the Ukrainian and Russia war, it's not because of those things, because we've had worse times in human history than we have right now. But what we haven't had is, first off, the nation of Israel is back in their land. And we also, what we haven't had, so that's the main difference between World War I, World War II, and all the things that happened prior to 1948, is you didn't have the nation of Israel. So it almost seemed to be impossible to have the end of the age events, because they focus around Israel, the land and the people being converted. And so we didn't have that over the past century. And also we have just a lot of things globally. The impacts of the things that happen now aren't just isolated to certain parts of the world, but they're almost all these things are globally, everybody's impacted by these things. Obviously COVID was global, the Ukrainian-Russian war, the effects of that are global. Just about anything that happens anywhere in the world is going to affect everybody else in the world. And so there's many things, and you'll find all those on the website. You know, the seven primary indicators that I list are Israel is a nation. Two, Israel is desiring a peace agreement, because the tribulation period begins with a seven-year peace agreement involving Israel. That's what triggers the tribulation. The rapture does not trigger the tribulation. The seven-year peace agreement involving Israel does. Three, a push for global government. And the reason that is important is because the beast system is a global government. The beast of the tribulation period, the Antichrist, will eventually, for the last 3.5 years, have complete control over the whole world. And so that's why people are recognizing the push by the World Economic Forum, by the United Nations, by many globalists for a one-world government. Not that they're desiring to bring about the Antichrist, because they don't even know. They don't believe the Bible, these people, and so they don't understand even, wouldn't even believe in an Antichrist. But what they're trying to do is push for global government, global control over everybody's lives. And then the beast, the Antichrist, when the time is right, will take control of that system that is set up. So the beast is not likely going to set up his own system. What's going to happen, I believe, is that the system is being set up, and it will be available for the Antichrist at God's timing to take over the system that is already built. So I do believe the beast system is being built right before our very eyes. Number four is a push for one unified religion. And that is happening right in front of us, mainly being led by Pope Francis. You can check that out on the website as well, all the details there. Five, Russia, Iran, and Turkey forming alliances and showing aggression towards Israel. It's something we'll talk about a little bit later today. That is a reference to the Ezekiel 38-39 war. That's a in my opinion. Some people believe it's a pre-tribulation event. I believe it is. It's in the tribulation period. But it'll either be right before it or in the I think it'll begin at the end of the first half of the tribulation period. But regardless, you definitely see that being set up as well. We'll talk a little bit about that today. Also, the necessary technology is number six, where you, in order for the beast to take over the whole world, in order to be everybody to have to take the mark, which happens at the midpoint of the tribulation period, you have to have the infrastructure in place to enforce that. So you don't have a beast, you don't have a mark of the beast now, and you don't, nothing, you know, there's so many people that speculate on vaccine this and this, you know, is this the mark of the beast? You cannot have a mark of the beast until you have a beast. And the beast doesn't take require the mark until the midpoint of the tribulation period. Again, by that point, people will know, or at least they should know, that they're in the tribulation period, because again, that begins with a 7-year visible public peace agreement involving Israel. Any believer around when that happens, and there will be some, I believe, will be able to clearly explain to people that we just entered the tribulation period. And then they'll be able to, you know, if they know the scriptures, be able to maybe help understand what is coming next, and then what is coming next, because the book of Revelation kind of lays that out in chapters 6 through 19. So we don't have mark of the beast. There will be no mark of the beast until the tribulation period. But I believe the infrastructure, just like the infrastructure of the beast system is being built, the infrastructure of the technology necessary to enforce it when it is required is already available. And just every day, of course, if you know anything about technology, it's staggering to see how much advancement happens year by year. And it's incredible. And then finally, and most importantly, and we will talk a little bit about this today, is the desire by the Jewish people for the third temple to be built. That is what I call the primary tribulation indicator. And that is to say that that is something that is necessary in order for the tribulation period, at least, well, I shouldn't say to begin, because I don't believe the temple will be built until the agreement is made and the tribulation begins, and it's probably going to be part of the agreement and they'll build their temple. But we know that there will be animal sacrifices occurring by the midpoint, because the Antichrist stops them, places himself in the Holy of Holies of this new rebuilt temple and claims himself to be God, institutes the mark, and on and on. And it's incredible to see the advancement of the desire for the Jewish people to build the third temple now. Even a couple years ago, it really wasn't a reality because of the political situation. And there's still politics and things that have to be dealt with. But the desire is growing and growing and growing for that third temple to be built. Again, I think my opinion has been, and I certainly don't know this for sure, but my opinion is that as we see these things growing and building and converging to all of these signs, converging to the point where the tribulation period will begin, I still believe that I am a pre-trib rapture person, which means I believe the rapture, the removal of the true church of God, true church of Christ, will be removed before the tribulation period, and probably very, very near the beginning of the tribulation period. Now, you know, like I said earlier, the rapture does not begin the tribulation period. The 7-year peace agreement involving Israel, that's in Daniel 9:27, that begins the tribulation period. But I do believe the rapture creates the environment to where it would change everything and accelerate all of these things that are converging now. It would just be the final nail in the coffin, put everything together. The man, the hero of the world would come along, and he'd have all the solutions. There will be this peace agreement, and everybody thinks that this man's figured everything out. And so, but as dramatic and as influential as COVID-19 has been, or the Russian-Ukrainian war, or the riots that we had in 2020, or January 6th, or whatever event you can think of that really changed the world in a significant way, will pale in comparison to the removal of the Church of Christ in an instant. It's hard to even imagine how cataclysmic that will be to the world. And so that'll be, the accelerant that brings everything together. And so, again, like I said, nobody knows the day of the rapture. Anybody ever tells you they know the day of the rapture, or they even predict it, then that really brings into question their credibility at all on anything, because they ought to know. Anybody ought to know that no one knows the day or the hour. But I do believe the Bible teaches that you can know the season. And how you know the season is by looking to see what happens after the rapture, the build up to it. And that's what I've been doing for, like I said, been doing it for longer than 5 years, and longer than 3 years, but really kind of began a ministry, a specific ministry to this about 3 years ago when COVID hit. About 5 months before COVID hit, I began to see all kinds of things happening. And then, of course, COVID hit, and that changed everything as well. So on this podcast, I do what I just call updates. I post a lot of posts on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Tumblr. It just kind of does twice a week. I usually do updates on what I learned that I think applies or is relevant to the end of the age. And so you can get that ongoing thing there. But once every month or two now, I was doing it once a month, and it hadn't been that long since I did my last one because I wanted to correct one thing and also want to talk about some other things. And so I did this one a little sooner. So I do this about once every month, once every 6 weeks. My main ministry, like I said, is the Crosscut Maker, is the EOA-IND.com. That's kind of where I do most of my work now. But I do enjoy doing the podcast. And I used to do theological podcasts, and who knows, maybe someday I'll get back to that. But right now, I pretty much, this is, I think, number 31 of the updates that I do and have done. And what I do is I just observe what I see that might be significant to tribulation stage setting. And so that's what we do here, and that's what I'm going to do now. So I have some notes here since the last one. The last podcast I did was on September 25th, and today is October 22nd, so it's been about a month. And the main thing I talked about last time was the red heifers. And if you follow eschatology, end of the age events, you probably know that Israel imported 5 red heifers that they're a year old and they are unblemished. They don't have anything but red hairs. And this is really significant to the building of the third temple because they need, according to what they believe, they need the ashes of a red heifer, an unblemished red heifer. That means it has to have all red hairs, it has to be never have been worked, yoked, and it also can have no blemishes, like, you know, injuries or anything like that. And so they've been looking for this red heifer for quite a while now. And they've had a few, I think a year or two ago, where I heard about their possibilities, but then they ended up not being qualified because they grew gray hair or white hair or something that disqualified them. But to get it past a year, to get one past a year, now this is where I need to correct myself. When I did the podcast last month, I thought the way I understood it was that these 5 red heifers that came in, that they were 1 year old and that they would be somehow qualified within 15 days. I was wrong. They were quarantined for 15 days, but it had nothing to do with them actually being qualified to be sacrificed. So I thought that sacrifice might have been imminent when I did the podcast on September 25th. It is not. What needs to happen, again, this is all according to what they believe, the Jews. I tried to look into Numbers 19 is where you find the red heifer. And I studied that a little bit, and I didn't see any qualifications about how old they had to be. But regardless, the Jews, the Orthodox Jews, who'd be in charge of building the temple, they believe that the red heifer needs to be 2 years old at least, and some think 3, and still have the pure red hair, no injuries, never yoked. And but this is still different and unique because rarely do you get one to go past a year, and they didn't have one; they had 5. And they brought in that I've never seen them bring any to Israel. So that shows me that they really have a high. They really think that at least one of these, all they need is one, to reach that 2-year point and still be qualified, and then they would immediately sacrifice because they want the ashes, and the ashes would last. They last as long as they would need it. And so I wanted to correct that. That as far as I know now and understand that it would be around September, mid-September next year, 2023, where one of these would be potentially qualified and sacrificed to get the ashes. And that would be a absolutely incredible, significant event if that does come to pass. Because again, they believe that they need the red heifer to sacrifice, to cleanse the temple, purify people to go into the temple. And so they have, you know, the Temple Institute, okay, is what they're called. They have this, they have a whole lot of things prepared. You can go to the templeinstitute.org, and there's other websites that they're serious about building the third temple, and they've already got a whole lot of things, the utensils, they've trained the Sanhedrin that would operate in there. They'd begin working on the stones that would be built, that would be used to build it. I mean, there's a lot of ways they're really serious about building this third temple and preparing for it now. And what they're waiting for are a few things, and one of them is the ashes of a red heifer. And the political permission, obviously, would be the most important thing they would need. Again, I think that happens with the tribulation agreement, so I'm not really anticipating that that issue would be resolved in this era, in this age. I think the church will be removed before that actually gets resolved. So I want to correct that on the red heifer. I thought that we could actually have had a sacrificed red heifer in the ashes by, you know, a couple weeks ago from now. And I was incorrect on that. So, but still, significant, something to keep an eye on. And, you know, again, when it comes to the age qualification, it's not in Scripture. So is it beyond, you know, an unbelieving Jew, which, you know, these people are unbelievers. Obviously, they don't believe in Christ. They're building a temple for the atonement of sins. And so they don't believe in the atonement of Christ's cross work. And so they're blind. And so could they change their mind and say, all right, you know what, we got one that is a year old, and hey, we don't see the qualification listed there, let's go ahead and sacrifice it, get the ashes so we can just get that taken care of. That's possible. But it seems to me they're pretty adamant about they need to be 2 years old. So that would put us in September of 2023. And if that comes to pass, you know, that really, all bets are off when it comes to, we're right on the very precipice. And I believe we are right on the very precipice of the tribulation period. It is very difficult because, again, no date setting, no, you know, nothing like that, but the buildup is incredible to watch how it's falling together. But at the same time, what's really partly glorious by God and also partly frustrating, you know, because of course we want to know, is he's doing this in such a way that the rapture, I believe, could happen today, and everything could get thrown into the tribulation period within a month from today. I believe it's that set up. Or you could see the process building slower, and it would be several more years, or, you know, again, I'm not setting any kind of time frame, but it could be several more years before things would occur. You know, I don't, again, unless I'm completely off on observing what I'm observing in the buildup, I don't see how it could be much past a couple years. Again, not setting any kind of date, time frame, expectation. My only point is it could be today or it could be a while, and it's incredible to see. So I wanted to correct that on the red heifer. Now, on October 12th, religious Jews held a reenactment of the water libation in order to prepare for the third temple. This is another way they're preparing, you know, just the same group preparing for the third temple. You can search that on YouTube. It's really incredible to watch. These are Orthodox Jews, and the Levites are playing these instruments. It's just incredible to watch this happen. And also, according to the Talmud traditions, they believe the time of Messiah is near because of world conditions, and it being the first year after a sabbatical year, the end of a seven-year cycle called the Shemitah, or Shemitah. And then there was another video I watched that show, and then reported on several places, that there's you know, claims that rabbis are in communication with the Messiah, but they're not, because they don't, the Messiah, the Jewish Messiah, is Jesus Christ, and they're searching for somebody else. And but the point is, their expectations of the imminent arrival of their Messiah, who, again, they don't believe is Jesus Christ, is really fervent right now. It's been fervent for a couple years, but they really are expecting their Messiah, which, of course, as noted, they won't receive their true King and Messiah, Jesus Christ, until the end of the tribulation. They have to go through the tribulation before they actually truly believe in Christ, and they will. They'll receive, but they'll be devastated by then. Two-thirds will be destroyed. And one third, God will keep the remnant and convert them all at the end of the tribulation period. But before that happens, they're setting themselves up to receive the worthless shepherd of Zechariah chapter 11, verses 15 and 16, of course, the Antichrist. So they're sitting there, so they're waiting for a hero. They're waiting for somebody to rescue them from all of the... And if you just follow Middle East news, it's incredible to see every single direction Israel has danger. Real danger. They have Hezbollah to their north. They have, of course, Iran is quite a ways to the east, but they also have Syria right there. They have the West Bank. They have Gaza Strip. You have all of these just basically completely surrounding this very small little nation. And they all want to destroy them, wipe them out. Iran is trying to build a nuclear weapon to wipe out Israel. And so they are completely surrounded. They, on a human level, they look completely hopeless. And of course, the reason they're not is because God is going to sustain them until he saves them at the end of the tribulation period. But in the meantime, they're looking for, you know, obviously the obvious help from the West, primarily, United States, Europe, you know. So they're dependent upon certain nations. And of course, the United States would be the top of the list. But they're going to eventually end up falling for who they... I don't know if they'll necessarily think he's the Jewish Messiah. I think they'll just accept this guy because he is the only one who has any kind of an answer for them. At least politically speaking, militarily speaking, it'll be a time of desperation. Again, post-rapture environment will be completely different. Who knows? My thought has always been that when that happens, one of the outflows of that would be a rush at Israel. There would just be, okay, the world's gone nuts for a day or two or whatever, however long that would take. We're going to make a rush at Israel because now's the time. And then along comes the man who has the plan, who has, you know, comes up with this peace agreement that seems to solve all the problems, including Israel's. And they will receive him. Of course, he's somebody who will turn on them eventually, 3.5 years into that 7 years. So that's incredible to watch that ceremony. Again, you can YouTube that. You can search that. It's worth watching. It's just kind of eerie to watch, to see how close we are to building the resumption of the third temple, or the building of the third temple. And also Israel, the foreign minister or the prime minister had teleconference with the EU and the EU foreign affairs, and Joseph, J-O-S-E-P, Borrell, he's the high rep for the EU foreign affairs. He was quoted as saying this was all over the news, quote, "We want the resumption of a political process that could can lead to a two-state solution and a comprehensive regional peace. Today is a good occasion to show our determination to have a positive and fruitful relationship with Israel, pushing for peace." Again, most people believe that the Antichrist will come out of the European Union. I think it's broader than that. I think the beast alignment, the beast system, will include more Western countries, including the United States. In fact, I think the United States will be the primary nation of the beast empire. And so it'll be a Western coalition, but obviously I think Europe will be part of that. And so you have this Western confederation that will come into play eventually. It'll be either 10 nations or 10 territories. It'll just be broken up into 10 kings, is what the scripture teaches. And in one of them, obviously, I think Europe will be part of that. And that just what he described there seems to describe exactly what the tribulation agreement would look like to me. Is a broad Middle East comprehensive regional peace that would include a two-state solution, or somehow to resume or to resolve the Palestinian issue. I have always believed that the Palestinian issue will be the linchpin of the tribulation agreement. That's what everybody is looking for to be solved. In Saudi Arabia, and they've thought about joining the Abraham Accords, but they've always said that they will only do that when the Palestinian issue is resolved. And so that, just the way he described that, sounds like that. And so there's just, the process is continuing to go forward. Again, I don't think it will be resolved this side of the rapture. I think the rapture will be the final accelerant that brings all of these ingredients, the Abraham Accords, the Iranian issue, and the Palestinian issue, all will be resolved, quote-unquote, by the Antichrist. He'll have a solution for it all. world peace and regional peace, at least in the Middle East. So I thought that was notable, that he basically, in my opinion, just described what the tribulation agreement will be, is the, again, a process that could lead to a two-state solution and comprehensive regional peace. All right, and then we also have Russia-Israel relations. Now, this has been something that's just kind of been back and forth like a ping pong ball with Israel and Russia, because it's, you know, Netanyahu had a pretty good relationship with Putin when he was in office. And the issue has been in Syria. Iran is trying to move weapons into and through Syria to Hezbollah, and Israel has to attack those bases and stop those arms movements. But Russia is also in Syria, especially since the United States completely has evacuated from Syria. And so you've had this relationship Israel's had with Russia where they have basically been given permission to, as long as they give them a heads up, and they obviously would avoid any direct attack on Russian troops, then they've been able to act with freedom in Syria to address the Iranian situation, which they have to do. Even if Russia decided not to give them permission, they still would have to, because I believe it's a matter of survival. If they just let Iran do whatever they wanted to in Syria, Israel would be, their existence would be threatened. And so you've had this, just a back and forth relationship. Of course, Russia invading Ukraine changed everything for everybody all over the world. And it also did change the relationship with Russia and Israel. Israel tried its best to stay out of anything. You know, they even at the initial invasion, they were kind of the last group to come, or last nation to come in and even offer humanitarian aid for Ukraine, because they recognized they just wanted to appease Russia so they could keep doing what they were doing to Iran in the nation of Syria. But of course they had to, and they finally did condemn the invasion, and they have been doing humanitarian aid, and that has brought tension between the relationship between Russia and Israel. You know, they closed down the, Russia closed down the I can't remember the name of the office, but it was the migration office of how Jews would migrate from Russia to Israel. That was shut, all that was shut down, and there's just been threats for retaliation and whatnot. But over the past week, what happened was, you know, what happened, Ukraine, apparently their special forces was able to blow up this bridge to Crimea, a Russian bridge, and it was a significant hit, and it was something that obviously angered Putin and Russia, and they responded with incredible missile attacks into Kiev, the capital, and they're still happening even as today. Last I heard, they did some more last night there, and what they're trying to attack now. They've really kind of limited some of the stuff they were doing with the missile attacks, but now they pretty much, when that bridge got blew up, they took everything and said, all right, and they've been going, hitting civilian targets, but mostly they're aiming for energy targets, like their energy resources, their anything that could provide energy for, especially for the winter. And so their power supply in Ukraine has been highly, highly compromised now, to where they're very worried about heating the country during this coming winter. And so they've been getting really aggressive. And so Ukraine has been asking, and the United States has been providing, and NATO has been providing for a long time, you know, since almost the beginning of the war. They refuse to put boots on the ground, because that would be a direct conflict, but we've been obviously providing them with arms. And so Ukraine has been asking for more help with these missiles that are flying in. They can't stop them all. And not only that, Russia is now using drones, Iranian suicide drones, from Iran. And so you have another weapon that they're unable to contend with right now. And so they're asking for more ways to help defend themselves from these missile attacks and the Iranian drones. And of course, so this week, the Ukrainian representative, I don't know what office he was, it wasn't Zelensky, but it was somebody in the government, you know, directly asked Israel for help with this, and especially, specifically, they have the Iron Dome Israel has, because they're always having missiles fly into Israel, and how they deal with that mostly is by the Iron Dome. It fires up and neutralizes these missiles. And so Ukraine was asking for help and asking for maybe even to get an Iron Dome set up in there so that they could defend themselves from Russia. And of course, it looked like for a little while that Israel is going to, you know, have to be, almost be forced to do that. Now, since then, they have said that they will not, they still, to this point, will not send arms into Ukraine. But Russia, when all that went down, when they were asking, Ukraine was asking Israel for help with arms, Russia warned Israel that they will sever all their relations if they provide any arms to Ukraine. And that would, you know, I think that the relationship between Israel and Russia is probably over anyway, because Israel had to side with the West in this issue, and they had no choice. They had to go with the United States, basically. The United States is the top protector of Israel, and they had to go with whatever the United States decided to go with. And especially Lapid, it seems like he is very, very easily, much more easily influenced by the United States than Netanyahu was. And this is another reason I believe that Lapid is somebody who is the perfect candidate to make the tribulation agreement because of his ideologies. But that's for another time. We'll probably talk in a couple weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. I might do another podcast because they're going to have elections. And it'll be very interesting to see who is, if anybody is able to, as far as I understand, Lapid will be the prime minister until there's a coalition, not just election day, but there actually has to be a coalition built in order for Lapid not to be the prime minister anymore. And that could take a while. That could take, you know, Netanyahu was, there's several elections where nobody could form a coalition, so Netanyahu just stayed in office. And that could be the same thing with Lapid, or Netanyahu could, you could. I heard both things, that he's favored to win, Netanyahu, to come back and win, or then I've also heard he's losing support. So I don't know. We'll find out what happens in November. I think it might be the first Tuesday in November. But they're going to have elections, and so, but anyway, Lapid is now the prime minister, and will be for at least a little bit of the foreseeable future, probably to the, I think the earliest would be the end of the year, where a new coalition could be formed. And he definitely has the ideology to make the tribulation agreement. He had to go with the United States. He has to go with the West. And most countries do, and probably the right thing. You know, I tend to view the world as fallen, and Ukraine is not innocent, Russia's not innocent, but in this particular situation, it does seem unprovoked, almost everybody would say the Russians did something they shouldn't have done, and I probably would fall in that camp, but I'm not as dogmatic about that. But regardless, one of the biggest things that the Russia-Ukraine war has done, in my opinion, I've said this on posts and I've said this on a podcast, multiple podcasts, is that it has the tribulation alliances are forming through this war. And I mean, when I'm talking about tribulation, I'm talking about what's listed in Scripture as who will be doing what. You see, these alliances are forming right now, and mainly, I think the Ukrainian war converged, or what's the word I'm looking for, is consolidated the Western nations. They're NATO and United States, and just all of the West has been consolidated in their response to Russia. And I do believe the beast system will be a consolidation of Western empires or Western powerful nations. And I've kind of listed some. I'll have to look that up and pull that out, but I do believe the United States will be part of it. The European Union will be part of it. Australia will be part of it. Canada will be part of it. Just the Western alliance is a very powerful, not every single nation to the west of Israel, but I do believe it'll be these powers that you think about will be part of this in unbeatable beast system. There has to be military dominance like the world has never seen, and you'd have to have the United States on that side. You'd have to have Europe on that side. Australia, Canada, they all fit into the alliance that we have now. The only one that kind of sticks out right now that's kind of in the middle is Turkey, because they're part of NATO, but they also have a pretty good relationship with Russia and Iran. And of course, they end up going with Russia and Iran if we're close, because Ezekiel 38:39, the big three of that invasion, they invade Israel, they're on the same team. It's Russia, Turkey, and Iran. And so they will end up getting off the fence and going with Russia and Iran whenever that invasion happens. But aside from them, who are just kind of going back and forth, you see, I mean, obviously with Russia using Iranian suicide drones, that is just is forming, as sharpening that alliance. You know, Russia and Iran are full-blown, so one aspect of the war of Russia and Ukraine is that Russia doesn't have many friends. Well, they found a friend in Iran now, and that's tightening and tightening, and that is a biblical alliance. And the Western countries is a biblical alliance. And so these things are just lining up perfectly for the tribulation period. And so I did mention Australia, as I believe they'll be part of this beast system. And they also had, I can't remember exactly what they did. They recognized, I think they've never had an embassy in Jerusalem, but they recognized the capital of Israel as East Jerusalem, I think. Again, I should have looked this up before I got on here, but regardless, they recognize Tel Aviv, I believe, as the capital of Israel. So they called this disputed area. The Jerusalem is no longer the capital of Israel, according to Australia. That is disputed, and that will have to be resolved by the two-state solution issue. And that was a change in things, how things were viewed by Australia. And of course, that upset Israel, and we'll see how that shakes out. But see, the thing with this Western coalition that will be the Beast Empire is what I'm looking for is, and including the United States, is like the Biden administration or whoever's running it, they're not friends of Israel at all. I believe the Trump administration, they were genuinely friends of Israel for whatever reason. I don't think Donald Trump's a Christian, but for whatever reason, he did a lot of right things for Israel. But I don't believe the Biden administration, whoever's running it, are friends of Israel. They pretend to be friends of Israel, but they're not really friends of Israel. And so you see that, you know, and same thing with a lot of these Western countries. They do lip service to Israel, but when it comes down to it, you can kind of tell that they're not friends of Israel. And that's how it's going to happen, is this Western coalition that will be the beast system will come to Israel's rescue, and they'll appear to be on their side. They'll appear to be their savior. They'll have their back. But it's not real. It's only, in my opinion, the Antichrist knows what he's going to do, or is anticipating. He's going to make them comfortable so he can turn on them. You know, it's hard to know exactly how that'll work itself out in his own wicked mind. But my assumption is that he's going to know what he's going to do. Either the hatred for Israel will be an undercurrent there. But you got to be looking for it, because on face value, of course, Biden administration says all the right things about Israel. But you can see by the way what their policies are that they really don't like Israel. Same thing with the Obama administration. They said all the right things, but they didn't really like Israel. And so I think that's where you'll see, and Australia is just another example, how you can see the reality of what they believe about Israel. They don't believe that Jerusalem's the eternal capital of Israel. And so they have withdrawn that support. And then one final issue I want to deal with is, and I heard this yesterday on a podcast, and I'm a little bit cautious with this, because I'm very careful with like conspiracy theories or, you know, things like that. I really am. I say this with, say up front that this is something that's probably speculation, and I certainly don't know. But the question was asked, talking about the Nord Stream pipeline. Now, if you know, or if you don't know, the Nord Stream pipeline is a pipeline that pumps Russian gas to Europe. So there was already problems. The Nord Stream, there was a second Nord Stream that was being built that's not in operation, but the initial one was actually sabotaged. It was blown up. And everybody's trying to figure out who did this. Everybody's pretty clear it wasn't something natural. It wasn't like an earthquake or something that it was intentional. It couldn't have been something that was an accident. And so it was done intentionally by somebody. And so the question has been, who did this? Who would gain from blowing up this pipeline? Because who's going to suffer is Europe. they're having something else I probably should have mentioned real quick is that they're in such a crisis point with their economy and with energy. They're entered, and this has to deal with this, is that, of course, a couple months ago, or 45 days ago, Boris Johnson resigned because of he had some COVID parties, and he covered it up, lied, and so he resigned. And Liz Truss, a lady who's a little bit more conservative, she took over. Now, again, I hadn't been following anything that's been going on with that, but all of a sudden something comes up on my phone that she determined she's going to resign, and she did resign, and that was the day before yesterday. And so it had something to do with just almost the economy collapsing, and with, I don't know exactly, something she did, and so it almost crashed everything, so she basically was led to, had to resign for what happened there. And I don't know all the details of that. So now they're going to have another prime minister, and now they're talking about bringing Boris Johnson back in about, I think, next Friday. So it'd be less than a week that he could be back in the prime minister, or it could be somebody else. But the issue, they're having incredible issues with inflation, and incredible because it's energy related. The main reason for all the inflation that we see going on everywhere in the world, including the United States, every time I go to Walmart, I come home really almost depressed. Because you're paying double for just about, I'm paying double for just about everything that you were paying, you know, a year ago. And it's, I sit there and go, I trust the Lord, He'll provide. I don't get freaked out about it. But just doing the math sometimes, I can go, how is this going to work? But I guess it's even worse over there because it's about energy prices. And they're, you know, gas prices, and they're worse shape over there because they were much more dependent upon Russian oil than we are. And so they really, really are struggling and talking about rolling blackouts in the winter and just really bad times coming there. And a lot of that was come from, you know, this Nord Stream pipeline being sabotaged. And so the three options that were offered as to who could have done this and who would have done this was the United States, Russia, or Europe themselves. And, you know, when I heard that, I was like, I have no idea. You know, it seemed my top candidate initially was Russia because I thought they were punishing Europe for what they're doing with responding in Ukraine, and they were just like, all right, we're just going to make your life miserable, and instead of just turning off the pipeline, we'll just damage it ourselves. And maybe that's what happened. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. This is speculation. But then I heard somebody yesterday report that this legitimate that. You know, the best candidate for having done that would have been the United States, because evidently we had some helicopters or some military forces on this the day that happened. They were in the area and then they were immediately out of the area, and they say that whoever did this had to have significant technology. This is not something that you could just do. You'd really have to have specialized equipment to do this. And the fact that they were in the area that day and then not in the area the next day seems to be pointing more towards the United States doing this. But then why in the world would the United States want to do something like that? And the theory I heard yesterday that kind of I'm trying to get to here and trying to wrap this all up is that the United States doesn't want, this is the theory that this man brought up, I can't remember his name, that the United States doesn't want Europe being growing in power too much, like a competition thing. Of course, Europe has been talking about consolidating more and even having its own military, and there's been talk about that from Macron of France and about giving their own, and so they've kind of been consolidating and growing. And the theory was America didn't want that kind of competition, so they thought, well, this would be a good way to set that back a little bit. And is that true? I have no idea. But again, just fitting this into what my theories are of tribulation stage setting is, again, I think the United States will be the primary player in the beast system. The primary player. I think you have to have the United States military as the main part of the beast empire. It'll be more than the United States. You know, it'll be 10 nations, 10 territories, or 10, you know, it might be the United States. European Union might be considered one, you know, under one king there, and then you have Australia, you know, all the ones we mentioned. And but it would be more than the United States, but I think the United States necessarily has to be part of the peace system. And so, you know, we often, especially us American citizens, can view the United States as we're the heroes, we're the good guys, and China and Russia and Iran, they're the bad guys. Well, you know, I hate to, the Antichrist comes from the West, whether it's Europe, United States, some other Western country, he comes from the West, there's no doubt about that. And certainly in the United States, if the tribulation is anywhere in the near future, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing here, is it, you know, I believe it is, America will be the significant part of the beast system. And so this would be just, again, I'm kind of trying to tie this into the pipeline thing, is that, you know, America wants to be the dominant factor still, in a sense. And they did this to make sure that Europe didn't get too powerful. But, again, I think they'll end up converging into both the European Union and the United States and Canada and Australia and several other countries will be part of, unified under the beast system. So I thought that was interesting to hear. You know, why in the world would the United States do something like that? So I don't trust, anyway, I don't trust this administration when it comes to just about anything. Their policies on abortion, their policies on trying to force the LGBTQ agenda down everybody's throats, it's just really evil, in my opinion. And I recognize myself as evil. I recognize every single human being as evil. And so it's not a pride thing. It's just a reality thing that the Obama administration and the Biden administration have been, in my opinion, the most evil political systems that we've ever had. And that's saying a lot, just based on how they treat the unborn and their deceptive level. They're just incredibly deceptive. So that's what I have today. Before I close up with the gospel presentation that I always close up with, I will say that I will probably do a podcast in a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks or so, because of there's always things going on every day. You know, people ask, my daughter always, first thing she always asks, anything interesting happened today? I usually don't talk about it with her, about these things, because, you know, she's 16 and whatnot, and she don't want to talk about it, and that's fine. But there's always something interesting happening every day in this world, and it's incredible times to live in. But two significant things coming up, obviously, the elections in Israel and the midterm elections in the United States. We'll see how those things go. We'll see if Lapid's able to hang on, or at least delay to another election, or whether Netanyahu will be able to somehow get back in power, or whatever happens over there. It certainly will be impactful for how things are setting up for the tribulation period. My thought is, you know, when Netanyahu got removed, I thought that was significant enough to report directly on that and post directly on that, and it's still on that website, that I thought that was absolutely significant, because I don't think Netanyahu's the kind of person who could possibly make the tribulation agreement. I could be wrong about that, because Netanyahu is a lost man. And so could he be deceived by the Antichrist? Absolutely he could be. But it just ideologically doesn't seem to fit. Where Lapid, you know, I thought Bennett, who preceded Lapid, I thought he brought some things to the table. He's religious Jew, and so I thought maybe he would be somehow involved in the Third Temple. And Bennett's not coming back; he's not even running in this time. And certainly, Lapid is, in my opinion, absolutely built, structured perfectly as a human being, to be the one who would make that tribulation agreement, where he trusts more in the Biden administration than he ought to, and he's more liable to do what the United States says than he ought to. Trusting the wrong people, in my opinion. But time will tell if he stays in power or what happens. I certainly think it'll be worth reporting on in a couple of weeks. So this is the longest one I had in a while, and I guess it's been about 50 minutes. And so I thank you for joining me, and I always close with a 30-second gospel presentation, because, you know, sometimes people are interested in end times and they're not even necessarily a Christian. So I'd like to close the podcast with a gospel presentation. Now, this is a different one than the one I usually do. This is a newer one, or I do gospel tracts, and this is one of the newer ones I made. Since the time of the return of God incarnate Jesus Christ may be near, which is directly preceded by a seven-year period of global distress triggered by a seven-year peace agreement involving Israel, your question should be, a lot of that we just talked about, what must I do to be saved, forgiven, and reconciled to the one true God? Repent, a confession of your sinfulness and hopelessness from your heart to God, and believe the gospel. The eternal Son of God added a human nature in the Virgin Mary to become the incarnate God, Jesus Christ. He is truly man and the one true God. He's not the person of the Father or the Spirit, but eternally and fully shares the one being of God with them. He lived without sin, died on a cross for the sin in the place of sinners, was raised bodily from the dead, ascended into heaven where he sits at the right hand of God the Father. He will one day return to judge the wicked and establish his eternal kingdom, where forgiven, glorified sinners will rejoice or enjoy his presence forever. If you genuinely do this, repent and believe, you will be instantly and permanently covered by the righteousness of Christ, and he will have been treated as if he committed all of your past, present, and future sins. Even better, this would begin a relationship with your Creator. If you refuse the offer of the gospel of Jesus Christ, you will be judged according to your works, and unless you have lived without even one sin like Christ, will end in eternal conscious condemnation, which is also why you don't want to add any of your own merit, that you have to have perfect righteousness. So if you blend yours with his, yours will taint his, and you will be condemned. So I hope that has been an informative podcast, and until next time, like I said, it probably will be a couple weeks. I'll probably wait till after both elections and see what's going on then. But until then, thank you for joining me, and may Christ be known.